Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Of all the things that I thought we'd be talking about today in the Tennis Podcast, Roger Federer saving 7 match points and winning is probably not one of them. How on earth did all that happen is what I want to know.
Well, he can't tell you because he can't remember them.
Really?
He thought there were only 3 or 4.
Is that right?
Yeah.
It definitely felt like the 7 that it actually was. I don't quite know how he's managed to completely miscalculate that. I just suppose it is representative of the blur he was in out there.
Well, I can relate to it from a perspective of commentating. I've said that before. When I commentate on a match, I can't necessarily remember that much about it.
Yes, to be fair, I tweeted that he'd saved 8 and it was actually only 7. So maybe I should have a little more sympathy.
It was in a time of madness.
Yeah.
It really was madness.
And actually, we experienced it, Matt and I experienced it from what's known as the radio room in the media centre, as opposed to in the commentary box. We weren't commentating on that match. And it's one of those where all the radio journalists are lined up. And when Federer is playing, we've got behind us the French and all the French-speaking journalists who follow him very closely.
It's a couple of Swiss, aren't there? Yeah, French-speaking Swiss.
And some of them are commentating live on their row, and then Five Live would say, come to me, and I was commentating on the saved match points. So I'm going pretty ballistic whilst they are in the row behind me, and then I hear some Aussies go, oh, no! Oh, I can't believe it! All this stuff over the other side. So yeah. the room was full of hollering.
Yes, there's lots of French people going, c'est une catastrophe!
So let's just go through the match quickly, because when he came out onto the court, he looks okay. And he played Tennis Sangren, who I watched the first set from the press conference room here, where they very helpfully have this big screen behind, and you can kind of watch whatever match is going on at the moment while you're waiting for the press conference to start. And in my case, I was waiting for Ash Barty. And I thought Federer was making some slightly weird choices, as though he hadn't really got the conviction and the... It just wasn't all clicking, but then there was a game at about 3-2 where Sangren, from 30 love up, suddenly looked injured to me. And he missed 2 backhands, he hit a double fault, everything looked off, and he got broken. And Federer won the set 6-3. Next thing I know, I sit through the 8-minute Ash Barty press conference, and then come out, and Federer's 3 love down. So what happened? What happened to him?
Well, I was also in the Ash Barty press conference.
Oh, yeah. I forgot that bit.
You two are better than me at accurate sequencing, but there was a lot in those 3... Did the verbal abuse warning occur during that 3-game period?
No.
I think that was the 3-game period in the third set.
Yes.
In the third set, right. I mean, he just... I think, with the benefit of hindsight... it's now obvious that he was struggling, probably from the... He probably walked out there knowing there was something.
And he said he really started feeling it in that second set.
Right. Well, that makes sense, but I think... nobody at that stage, nobody had quite cottoned on. They just thought it was a blip of a game. He definitely dropped off speed on his serve, but again, it just looked like a blip of a lost service game. He was serving second in the set, so 3-love was just one break of serve. There was still that kind of eerie atmosphere in the Rod Laver Arena that we've discussed. Well, not even eerie, actually. That's the thing that we discussed a few times throughout the week. It was just kind of flat. Yeah. Everyone was sort of just waiting for the other shoe to drop. But that said, it was still only one break of serve. There wasn't enough data, I suppose, to draw any kind of meaningful conclusions about when he was at, but where he was at. But obviously, with the benefit of hindsight, at that stage, he must have been feeling what we now know is a groin. He said it's not an injury; it's a thing and a.
It's a tightness.
It's a tightness and maybe a problem, but it's not an injury.
Right? Because I mean, and we all thought initially that it was a back injury, like. He suffered against Grigor Dimitrov at the US Open last year.
Because all the indicators were there. His service speed dropped right off. He wasn't arching his back when serving. They did a split screen on Channel 9 comparing his service motion from the first set to, I think this was the latter stages of the second set. And the back arch was almost completely gone. He was trying to get all his service power just from his arm, just from pure muscle, which was quite interesting to see. Actually, his speed had only dropped by about 10%, which obviously... at the top echelons of sport, when it's all about fine margins, is a lot. But amazing that he was able to still produce what he was with a completely altered service motion. He wasn't rotating on his shots. It was just all coming from arm muscle.
Yeah.
And there was a part of me, as distressing as it was to see Federer in that physical state. There was a part of me that did quite enjoy seeing him just have to go off pure skill.
Yeah.
Pure sort of arm, hand skill.
See how far that could get him
in
this match. Because what he, and I loved his quote on court afterwards, because he's never retired from a match, has he? 1,500 odd matches, he's never retired from one.
Which is amazing.
And he wasn't about to now. And he said afterwards something like, I thought, let's just let him finish me off. And I thought, what a visceral... kind of image that is.
He called it a miracle, didn't he? Said, I believe in miracles. That's what this was.
But as the match started to go on, I mean, Sangram was getting stronger, more confident, and just bulldozing him around the court, really. Won those two sets, 6-2, 6-2. There was the verbal obscenity in the third set, which was caught by the line judge at the back of the court, and which Federer... disputed with the umpire and sort of queried with the line judge herself a couple of times.
He was on very thin ground, though. His defence seemed to be not that he didn't say it, but that it can't be proven.
He
sort of said, you're not Swiss, how can you possibly know?
But, I mean, I think few people picked up an F-word.
Yeah.
He admitted, he said... something in English and then something in his native.
He also tried to slightly get out of it based on previous good behaviour.
Yeah. Yes, he said, I'm not usually that guy.
He was just irritated, wasn't he? I enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it a lot, yeah. It was that period of the match, though, where you started to realise, hang on a minute, something is seriously wrong here, because... he threw his opening service game away in that set. 3 forehand errors and a double fault. Then got to love 40 and blew all of those chances. Then got the warning. Then argued about the warning. And then went off for an off-court medical timeout. All in the space of 3 games. And suddenly you realised, hang on a minute, this is not just a little blip. This is a serious crisis that Federer's in here.
Yeah. I very much enjoyed the way the umpire... Mariana Veljovic handled the whole thing.
She's magnificent.
The best umpire there is, both in terms of her line calling and her handling of situations. She's the best.
Very cool, under what is a microscope when Federer's coming towards you and trying to make his case about something. She just turned the mic down and just looked him in the eye and just said it how it is. And props to her for that. So what happened for this to turn around? Because all the way through the fourth set, it was kind of nip and tuck, wasn't it, really, in the fourth set? It wasn't like Sangren was running away with it, but he had these seven match points. Now, my recollection, I felt, yes, Federer hung on, but I also felt that Sangren blew it. He made some unforced errors that he wasn't making earlier on. And look, I accept that the nerves are incredibly heightened. It's not surprising, but I also think he will have nightmares tonight about it.
He'll have nightmares, maybe not tonight, but because he's at this very moment out having a very good time.
Downing shots per match point lost,
yes.
He said.
Two match points lost.
Yeah.
That's going to be a heavy night.
I thought he did start, it's still hampered obviously, but he did start moving a bit better in that fourth set, Federer, presumably whatever painkillers he was given, and I want to know what they are. Sound great.
Stock up.
He couldn't remember any of the match afterwards. They must have been great. Presumably they kicked in, right? Generally there's about a half hour lag time for that kind of thing. So
plus adrenaline started to kick in, I
absolutely.
Think.
Absolutely.
When he was close enough, and because when he saved those, because I think, well, I can't really remember all the match points. The shot I really remember was on either the set point or the one that set him up with set point, when he was stretched out wide to his left and he just did that little backhand flick. And then was it a lob after that? I can't exactly remember, but I just remember him coming up with this Houdini act of a backhand flick cross court at the feet of Sangren, and it was, that was one of those take your breath away moments from Federer, really.
For somebody that was playing quite high risk tennis, really, I mean, generally speaking, Federer's brand of tennis is relatively high risk to lots of other players, but with the physical impediment it was that bit more high risk. He wasn't wanting to get involved in long side-to-side rallies. For him to have not made an error on those seven match points is, I mean, scarcely believeable. Well, he said it himself, it was a miracle.
And he did play. There was, I think he won one 28-stroke rally at one stage, which suggested that he was, because, I mean, there was definitely a period where he was just doing the whole erratic bailing out of rallies thing, when he was just trying to slash winners that weren't really on and he wasn't in position for, and then suddenly he just battened down and tried to get some timing, it seemed to me, and won that extended rally.
I was just amazed by how calm he stayed. I think the way he said it in that on-court interview, he was waiting for Sangren to finish him off. I think he was kind of at peace with his situation. I think he knew he wasn't physically capable to do what he wanted to do, but he made the best of what he had. And I think what you were saying, Catherine, about how you kind of enjoyed seeing him use his racket skills and his hand skills, I kind of feel really differently about that. I found the whole match really distressing to see Federer's body failing him like that, when usually it just allows him to play the most elegant tennis, and you just see him not in position to hit the right ball, shanking the ball, and
Second slam in a row.
And I find that such a tough watch, but then equally I'm so impressed by just how calm he's able to stay and how he is able to fight. It's wrong that Federer isn't ever really portrayed as that much of a fighter compared to Djokovic and Nadal, because he absolutely is.
Quiet resilience, isn't it?
Exactly. It's a different type, but it's as important in his makeup as it is any other great champion's makeup. He just has a different way of showing it, and I think I enjoyed the way he showed it today by staying so calm.
I think there are two different personality types, aren't there? I think there are those that feel liberated by having control taken away from them, as is the case in an injury type situation. I get the impression from what he said that he just felt like this is out of my control. My body has done this, whatever. I'm it's in the hands of the gods now. And there are some people that's the most anxiety-inducing situation imaginable. It's the difference that I find that plain situations
yes.
delineate those two different personality types. Some people are at utter calm on a plane, and they, you know, when you're sat there having a panic attack, they say, "Well, there's nothing you can do about it." So
we've discussed this, haven't we?
Yeah.
I'm more at peace with it because what can I do about it?
Mm. Yeah, same.
But I know that you've felt differently.
Control freakery. Yeah.
But in the once he'd saved them and he'd won that set, in the fifth, there was never really any doubt. I think they went to two games all, but suddenly the Federer feet started to move. The little tip-tap toes were going, and you started to... He suddenly got interested in it again mm. as a match he could win as opposed to a match he just wanted to get through.
It all ended with the finger wag, didn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
A very proud one. Not a defiant one, just a sort of triumphant mm. moment of just self... achievement of overcoming ridiculous odds.
And I think if we again compare it to the US Open, where okay, it sounds like it's a different injury. There it was his back, which he said needed cracking, and here it's the groin. But one of the things he said in that press conference after the US Open was that he was disappointed he didn't get through against Dimitrov because he felt like in a couple of days it might be fine, that yeah. injury. And he's talking in similar terms in his press conference now, saying, you know, he's got 48 hours until his semi-final.
He said, oh, it's not like I have to play tomorrow.
Exactly.
Night match, actually, under the lights as well, might help him. Look, I am really grasping at straws, I feel like, here. But he also said, maybe I'll just go into it feeling free, because I'm not supposed to win, am I?
And he talked about adrenaline, you know, yeah. potentially getting him through.
There's a few straws.
Yeah.
I do always think about Andy Murray in his press conference here last year when he finally admitted, you know, I've been lying about the state of my hip for 2 years or whatever it was, a year and a half, because I'm obviously not going to give that advantage to my opponents, am I? That would be madness.
Mm.
And it would be madness for Federer to say, obviously, I'm not going to be able to make any kind of threat to Djokovic, but there are straws as listed.
I was just thinking that a match like this for Federer, as the Milman one the other day, even though he's ended up in that situation because he's not playing very well, ends up being a legacy enhancer, really. You know, the way people still talk about Jimmy Connors and his run to the US
True.
Open at 39.
Who knows? It could end up being.
And people remember the epic matches he had in that run. And people will remember these matches that Federer has had at 38, not feeling his best and getting through them.
Pretty proud.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I think he was after the Milman match and even more so today.
Because he's not had a great five-set record recently.
Mm.
At the end of that match, my BBC radio bosses, we were live on air and I was supposed to do the next match, and they asked me to come downstairs from where you and I were sitting, Matt, and race down to the commentary box, which is on the court, basically, courtside. What happens is when a match is finishing and players are coming off, there's what they call lockdown, and you're not allowed to move about. You have to wait until the player and their entourage comes through and goes back to the locker room so that you're not in the way and you're etc. You know, we're not important, relatively speaking, are we? But whilst I was being held there in the player area, Roger Federer's family were all there waiting for him to come through the Walker Champions off the court to greet him, and his kids were all there. And his little son, I don't know which one it was, there's Leo and Lenny, isn't there? Federer comes walking out, and one of his sons just jumped into his arms. You've never seen a kid just throw themselves at their dad quite like it. It was a beautiful moment, really.
Hopefully that's not going to worsen his injury situation.
he complained at one point, Federer, about the noise coming from those commentary booths. Was that you?
No.
No, David was with me.
And also,
you're his alibi.
We are thankfully yes. behind a soundproof glass.
Well, that, they all are.
It would have been from the side where you know where the TV third person sits with the microphone in the open air. That's what was being referred to.
Oh, the courtside commentator
yes.
role.
Somebody was maybe doing it a bit louder than they should have been.
Right.
And got ticked off. So that's what that was.
That would have been Sam Groth.
I don't know.
Oh, and there's an ESPN one usually
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, I'm not
there?
Sure
Might
who
not have
it
been
was.
Sam.
So I don't know. But the when we're talking about straws being clutched at, the reason that I talk in those terms is because I've just seen the first two sets of Novak Djokovic against Milos Raonic. And when you think how well Raonic has played this tournament, how easily he dispatched Stefanos Tsitsipas, and then to see what Djokovic just did to him. He made his serve look like nothing. He made him look like a lumbering, inflexible, ordinary tennis player, Djokovic did tonight. And the third set, Djokovic had a problem with his contact lens, which seemed to really freak him out. And this, I think this is what happened when he gets a twinge or when the contact lenses go and he needs sorting out. He panics. He just starts panicking.
He's hypersensitive to that sort of thing.
And he kind of just signals to everybody in the stadium that there's a problem, which is total opposite to Federer and Nadal, who just don't let you know. Really, they're trying to cover it up. I mean, everybody's different, but it's. I just felt that the form he is in. I mean, recency and all the rest of it, but he's playing just as well as he did in that final against Nadal last year. Plus, as Goran Ivanišević was telling us last night, he's beefed up that serve. I mean, in the first set, they both served five games each. Raonic served 55 points, Djokovic 25 for those
Ridiculous.
10 games.
Ridiculous.
Just amazing. So I find it hard to believe that Federer can really make it close. But then there's always just that little bit in the back of the mind when you think, it's Roger Federer, he's a genius. What if he has one of those days?
Yeah, think of the way he turned it on against Djokovic in their last match at the O2. Federer went into that match with not much form. He'd lost to Thiem in the group stage and didn't look great in that tournament really, and then turned it on against Djokovic. But I just can't see that happening.
That's a straw. Right
That's
there.
It's a straw. But honestly, I would at this stage I would be surprised if Federer makes that four sets. Given the form that they're both in and the history that they have in Grand Slam matches against each other.
There's actually an instability about Federer's game at the moment. Take away the injury.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he's just not timing the ball, is he?
I mean, the one caveat I would say is he was timing the ball absolutely immaculately in his second match against Krajinovic. Mm. Look, I know it's Filip Krajinovic, it's not Novak Djokovic, but the drop-off in his game since then has been pretty dramatic. He was timing the ball so well, hitting winners just at will in that match.
That's why I think it's better that it's night, even though there's concerns about the slowness of it. It's going to be a hot one, isn't it, actually, Thursday?
Yeah.
So, well, we'll see. I hope it's a good match, you know, because it's a great thing to look forward to as an event.
Yeah, their 50th meeting.
Wow. That's pretty cool. 26-23 it is to Novak Djokovic. So that's to come in a couple of days' time. Other matches we had today, I mentioned Ash Barty, and you may remember last night we were talking about how she was scheduled in the afternoon, and we all thought that she should be scheduled in the night match because there'd be so many more eyeballs on it. A lot of people at work, a lot of kids are at school. And we've been trying to get to the bottom of it a little bit. So I went into the press conference and asked her whether she'd requested to play in the daytime because of the conditions being different to what she played Kvitova in last year when they played in the night session. And she didn't answer explicitly, but she said, I think all players have a preference and let it be known what they want, and I'm always happy to play with the sun on my back. So it's quite clear she and the team had made a request to play in the afternoon. Now, other players would have done as well, but she is the world number one. She is the big star in Australia, and maybe that would have carried some weight. But I'm still confused about the way the structure of the order of play for Monday, Tuesday and Wednesday of the second week seems to be different from what it was last year.
I think, and I don't know this, I'm speculating here, but I think they have made a deliberate decision to change the structure of the day for the quarterfinal stage, which is today and tomorrow, where this year the schedule is three matches in the day, two of them women's, one men's, and then one men's match at night, whereas last year it was two and two. And the reason I say that is because if they had still had their schedule from last year, two and two, then if Barty had put her request in to play during the day and they had wanted to grant that, then why wouldn't we have had Barty in the day and a men's match and then the other women's match and a men's match tonight?
Yeah,
you can't imagine, with all due respect, Sophia Kennan and Ons Jabeur's request for where they play to hold the same weight as Ash Barty.
Yeah. And, I mean, I'd like to get that confirmed. We'll see if we can make some further inquiries. I mean, on one level, I like the fact that night sessions are not going into the early hours, and having two, a men's match and a women's match in the evening session is likely to make that happen. But on the other hand, you effectively have an entire week of tennis where the women don't get a night session at all. Women's tennis just isn't on.
And the night session is the prime slot.
Yeah.
It's especially the first night session match. It's the prime time slot, and frankly, it just looks like the women have been completely shunned. Today it felt like the two women's matches, let's get them out of the way and then let's get on with the men.
In the two day sessions, I mean, they're in the two least prime slots of the day session. Mm. I just don't feel like playing a quarterfinal at 11 a.m. on a weekday is a good look. I mean, the atmosphere was really flat today. I mean, it wasn't great for Barty Kvitova, really. I mean, we've talked about the sort of slight bizarreness of atmospheres sometimes on Rod Laver Arena. It can take a sort of artificial spark to ignite it. Not artificial, but it can take the player to ignite it, and perhaps that doesn't come naturally to Barty so much. But it feels wrong. It doesn't feel right.
No.
and it's not the point, but I don't think Barty is actually that affected by it or bothered by it. I mean, that's absolutely not the point.
Like I said, I think she wanted to be in the afternoon.
Yeah, I think she wanted to be in the afternoon, both in terms of conditions, but also I think she's quite happy without a load of fuss being made of her and having all the hype in the same way that Kyrgios Nadal match has. I think she absolutely deserves all that, but I think she's quite happy not to have it.
Just before we get on to the other matches, the French Open today has announced that they are going to change things for their lineup, aren't they? They're going to have all the quarterfinals on Philippe Chatrier?
Yeah, all the quarterfinals onwards. So quarterfinals, semifinals and finals on Philippe Chatrier. Whereas before they've split them, Philippe Chatrier and Suzanne Longlon. What it means is there's now two sessions for the quarterfinals. So it'd be over 2 days. There'll be a session with a men's and a women's quarterfinal, and then a later session with a men's and women's, and then the same replicated the next day. So it could mean some late finishes there.
They're strategically not calling it a night session.
No, they're not.
Starts at 5 p.m.
Oh, right. I mean, they're going to have some seriously late finishes, aren't they? I mean, it's good in that they all get centre court billing, but also, we know that some of those matches probably will be very sparsely attended at certain points, mm-hmm. and then it could be an early hours job.
And clay, you might think often matches go on longer, and there's no final set tiebreak at the French Open. I'm already having visions.
Get yourself a 10-point tiebreak at 6-6 in the fifth set.
Yeah,
come on, Roland Garros. Yeah, you need to do that.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com. Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. So, other matches. Anyway, first of all, Ash Barty was very good today because she had to fend off bullets from Petra Kvitova today for a set, didn't she? And she won it 8-6, but it was a rear guard action. What was that line that Jim Courier said early on in the match?
Oh, yeah, it was a great line. He said Petra Kvitova's returns are travelling at light speed. So if you're Ash Barty, you're having to hit your second serve and then brace for impact.
Yeah, it was just like that. She was just having to set herself, fend these things off and just try to stay with her in that first set. But eventually, and I think because of the conditions being relatively slow in this court and the balls, Kvitova's big shots started to have less impact. And the moment she'd lost that first set, it was game over.
She didn't have anything else to throw at her, did she? She'd thrown it all in the first set and just wasn't quite enough. It was great. Really was great, that first set. Real nip and tuck, problem-solving, lovely contrast of styles, just all the things you want.
You saw how Barty had grown over 12 months in that match.
Absolutely. And the way she's, as Matt points out, turned that head-to-head around is such a marker of what a changed player she is in such a relatively short period of time. I mean, she owns that head-to-head now. And Kvitova used to be a real problem opponent for her.
Yeah. Plus, you know, you see it as well in the press conference room because she takes the mick out of us. She gives us a hard time in a nice, jovial way. But she owns that room. You know, we might try to push some buttons, interrogate her, ask the right questions, but she takes over. And it's really interesting to watch a young woman of 22 years of age suddenly just not being so shy about it all. And she doesn't embrace it as such. She's not interested in it. I mean, at the end of it, she says, look, no offence, but I'd rather be somewhere else right now. You know, I'd rather be with my mates. Rather than talking to you lot all day, but we know what she means. You know, it's just part of the job. She knows it's part of her job, and she does a good job of it. She says, I don't know what to say to you all half the time. I feel like I'm just going around the houses. But she actually gives you some good quotes, good answers, and then gets out and starts preparing for what she actually wants to do, which is enjoy playing tennis on big stages.
She's an utter professional, isn't she?
Yeah.
And yeah, it just was a, as you said, a perfect demonstration of how she's improved. She lost to Kvitova last year in straight sets in the same stage. She beat her in straight sets this year. And I just thought, normally when Kvitova plays well, which she was, it feels like there's nothing an opponent can do.
Yeah.
And yet, Barty has tools in her game.
She blunted it.
To be able to throw her off. There's not many players who can do that.
There was a rally that not only did she win, but I felt she broke Kvitova's heart. She ran out wide to her right and did one of those squash shot off, literally off the ground. You feel like the ball is about to double bounce and she just about gets it and flicks it. And then Kvitova volleyed. Barty lobbed, smash. Barty lobbed, smash. Barty lobbed again, clean winner. Three lobs in the same point. And I just thought at that point Kvitová was broken, really, as a force in the match.
And I think Barty remembered that point as a crucial one. She was asked about it in her press conference, and she said, yes, there's, I think it was at 3-2 in the first set tie break, and she said, yeah, mentally there's such a big difference changing ends at 3-0 rather than 4-2. And I just felt like I'd got her then.
Yeah.
And it really, I don't know if this sounds like a weird thing to say, given that she's the world number one, but it really struck me today for the first time how on this is for her to win this.
Yeah. Well, she's expected to.
Yeah.
Would you make her the favourite right now? Muguruza, Halep?
Yes, I would. Yes.
Yeah, I would. But maybe it was today that I formed that in my mind, because I don't know, maybe I've just been so busy with caught up in Serena and Osaka going out and Muguruza's form and Halep looking good. But then I thought, hang on a minute. Ash Barty's the world number one. She won the WTA finals beating all the best players in
Plus
the world.
Plus, she's playing like that. It's not like she's just got that number next to her. She's playing like that player. And she's going to play against Sofia Kenin next, who defeated Ons Jabeur 6-4, 6-4 today. I saw that match on TV before I came in. It was actually a much closer match than it sounds, and Jabeur had her chances. I wonder whether, in a way, it might help Kenin to have played Jabeur before she plays Barty.
Interesting.
Just style-wise, because they're not that dissimilar. And Kenin, she's a little pit bull. She just will not let you have it. No matter... I mean, Jabeur, a lot of the time, was the better player in rallies. And yet Kenin keeps going and keeps asking questions and makes you hit another shot, makes you go for a line you probably shouldn't be going for, and she eventually extracts errors.
It's no-nonsense tennis, isn't
it? Never lets herself down. Mm. And her post-match interview on court, I mean, it was slightly uncomfortable because she's so matter-of-fact.
Yes.
She doesn't turn on any sort of charm machine at all, and that's absolutely fine. You be who you are. But it was quite comical to watch her just go through the motions and get the job done and be efficient and right off we go to the next thing.
Yeah, she's not trying to ingratiate herself with anyone, with her tennis, with her personality. She is what she is, and I love it. I really love her. I think
she's a badass.
She is. She really is. She's a pocket
in a nice way.
Badass. Yeah, she's cool. Weirdest service action in town.
What is the weird thing about it? Is it the one that she doesn't look...
Well, she must...
What does she do?
She must be a problem for coaches everywhere who, you know, the first rule of rudimentary tennis coaching is keep your eye on the ball, right? I mean, that is rule one. And she, in the first shot of any rally, or when she's serving, she doesn't keep her eye on the ball. She tosses the ball into the air, and her eyes remain down until the last minute when she looks up. Her eyes aren't in sequence with her arm.
So
it's so weird.
Do you think we're going to get an epic between her and Barty? Because I think that there's a real chance of that.
Yeah, I think it'll be three sets.
Yeah, I think. Look at Kenin. I think where are the weaknesses?
This could be the tense one for Australia. Yeah. This is the one that could make people's nerves fray.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
And I think they've had some close matches in the past as well.
She's just not going to give two hoots about the fact that it's Australia and it's Ash Barty and everyone's cheering against her. In fact, I think that might help Kenin.
Yeah.
And I just think back to the way that Osaka against Goff seemed bothered by the fact that she was playing a 15-year-old and really, you know, was aware of that situation, whereas Kenin just didn't. Just treated it like any other match, and I think she'll be able to do the same against Barty.
They played in Wuhan last year, and it was 6-3, 7-5 to Barty. They played in Canada also last summer, 7-6 Barty, and then 6-3, 6-4 to Kenin. So she won in three sets. They played at the French Open, and it was 6-love in the third to Barty. But it, you know, it went the distance. You know, so they played some matches. They also played the year before in Charleston, and Barty got the win there. So the ingredients are there for a really tasty match. So looking forward to that. Before we look ahead to tomorrow, There was a bit of a diplomatic international incident today over on the Margaret Court Arena because Martina Navratilova staged a protest on that court, as it's been well documented and we talked about yesterday. Margaret Court was honoured in a short ceremony the night before for the 50th anniversary of her... Was it the career of the Grand Slam?
The calendar year slam.
The calendar year slam, yeah. And as you'll have known if you've been following the news or following our podcast over the years, Margaret Court's views that she's so openly stated about so many subjects and upset so many people have led to people thinking that her name shouldn't be on an arena at the Australian Open, which is the second major arena here. Martina Navratilova has been one of the most outspoken people about that fact and has long campaigned or long stated that she thinks Margaret Court should not be honoured in any way, given the type of views she has and has stated publicly against people from LGBT groups. And Navratilova wrote an open letter today on the Tennis Channel website stating that fact and stating that she believes that the Margaret Court Arena should be renamed the Yvonne Goolagong Arena. Today she played a Legends doubles match on that court and at the end of it unveiled a sign that she'd made which said the Yvonne Goolagong Arena. And she went up the steps of the chair umpire's chair to make a speech. And she had John McEnroe with her, who has also been very outspoken on Eurosport recently, as an ally in this protest. And from what we understand from the reporting that I've read, at shortly after she started that speech, the television feed was cut. So it didn't go very far. There weren't that many people in the arena. I know Martina did one or two interviews afterwards, including with my colleague BBC Radio 5 Live's Russell Fuller. And then there was a statement put out by Tennis Australia saying that protocol had been not followed by two high-profile guests, are the words that they used, and they said that they were working through the issue with them. Exactly what that involves and will lead to, I don't know. But quite a standoff, it feels like, between the two.
And Simon reported in his Telegraph piece about it that Tennis Australia had considered revoking Martina Navratilova and John McEnroe's accreditations, but had elected not to. Which, again, kind of feels like a fudge. I mean, if they've violated this sacred protocol, then does it matter who they are? Take their accreditations. I mean, for me, that's not the route I'd go down. I'm just going the logical conclusion of their position. And I still feel like they're trying to have their cake and eat it with their position. And I don't know, it was a peaceful protest, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was. Were they... I'd like to know the wording of the exact protocol that they're referencing. They say, we have protocols here. Well, what is that protocol? What were they in violation of? Because it seemed like a very peaceful, unthreatening protest to me. And certainly, whether you tolerate it or not, to cut the feed of it so that there's no record of it anywhere. It's very difficult for people to accurately report on, because literally there's no record of what she said. That doesn't feel right. That feels authoritarian to the extreme.
Yeah, I thought the same. So we'll see what happens next with that story, and let you know if any more developments come from it. So, order of play for tomorrow. Let's have a look what we've got. It will all start at 11 o'clock. I know this because I'm going to be here at 11 o'clock reporting on BBC Radio 5 Live on the day session. And it's all going to start with Annette Contaveit against Simona Halep. It's it's an early start, isn't it? 11 o'clock again for the quarterfinal. Players have to be up really early. I mean, nothing hugely new for them, but it'd be interesting to see how Kontaveit handles this, because it's her first quarterfinal. It's going to be a pretty warm day, I think. It's 2 days' time when it's going to go absolutely ridiculous, and it's going to be 41 degrees in 2 days' time. But tomorrow will be pretty warm. Kontaveit against Halep. What Halep. Do we think?
Ooh. Halep.
Halep in two for me.
Yeah. For me, that's the most... Why would I say this out loud? The most nailed-on result tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Of the four singles matches.
I would have thought that would probably be the case as well.
Halep is the only player in the women's draw not to have dropped a set yet. And
she's just got better and better,
yeah.
hasn't
yeah,
she?
Yeah, she really has.
I would say
after
she's...
a shaky first set against Jennifer Brady, she's looked a lot better in the fourth round.
To my mind, she has been the Djokovic of the women's draw in the way she has played. Imperious stuff, and the surface just appears to be perfect for her. You can't get the ball past her. So how'd you beat her? Halep beat Kontaveit in their most recent match. It was 2.5 years ago in Rome, 6-2, 6-4. They played in Miami. It was 6-3, 6-love. So Halep has... I mean, it's a while ago. You know, obviously, Kontaveit is a better player now, but still... It's she goes in as a heavy favourite. We've got Garbiñe Muguruza against Anastasia Pavlyuchenkova. So this is Muguruza basically playing against her former coach as well as Pavlyuchenkova.
And as much as she denies it, I do think there will be ghosts there. I think that will be an element in her mind. But I think Muguruza will come through that. But then as I say that, I hear 71 winners. 71 winners.
But can Pavlyuchenkova reproduce that on the Rod Laver Arena against Muguruza? When it you know, she's never been to a semi-final of a Grand Slam. It's a
no, I
big
think
ask
it's
to
a
play.
Lot more likely that Muguruza will produce.
And I think as incredible as Pavlyuchenkova was in that match against Kerber, with those 71 winners, I think Kerber gave her a ball that she was able to do that off.
She was used to it as well. They've played each other 14 times, haven't they?
Yeah, exactly. Whereas I think Muguruza might be a bit more dominant and a bit more aggressive and slightly take her time away. And if Muguruza is playing as well as she has been in her last two matches, where she's beaten Svitolina and Bertens, I think she can come through that.
Yeah. Most recent match was in Birmingham on grass a couple of years ago. Muguruza 6-1, 6-2. Although they did play in Stuttgart and it was a retirement, and Pavlyuchenkova won the first set of that before Muguruza retired. So we'll see. She's clearly playing the tennis of her life, pretty much, Pavlyuchenkova. Let's see if she can...
71 winners. It's so many.
That is a lot, isn't it? That's like a week's worth.
A month.
I mean, Caroline Wozniacki can play a season with that game, 71 minutes. Sorry, Caroline. Stan Wawrinka against Alexander Zverev. That is an interesting one, isn't it?
Yeah, it's another one where we looked up the head-to-head and there are no recent meetings to go on. I think the most recent one was 2017, which I don't draw too much from that at all. So... I don't know.
Yeah,
I really don't know about that one.
I have no idea.
Well, newsletter is where you need to go, folks, to find out what we eventually went for. If anybody had the guts to go for the Vavrinka Zverev match, sign up to the newsletter in your show notes if you haven't already. That's where our daily prediction, one apiece, will be. Most of mine have been awful. What did I go for today? Oh, Barty's today.
Yeah.
And railroaded me into... going for Kvitova.
That's a shame. So I've closed the gap. Awesome. Yes. Okay, well, I don't know. Vavrinka Zverev, kind of think Zverev might win.
Yeah. It's
Isn't
I think
it
he might too.
Isn't it amazing to think that Zverev is doing this? He's the only bloke left who's not dropped a set, isn't he?
Yeah, which is remarkable. And if he wins, it would be his first... Grand Slam semi-final. It would be a huge deal.
Wow.
I just think what we were saying the other day about how much Wawrinka enjoyed beating Medvedev. Apparently, I saw someone quoting that his record against pretty much everyone in slams outside of the big four since 2013, when he really developed, is seriously strong. He seems to want to make that statement against whoever it is that he's, you know, a top player who is contending for these things. And once he gets into the second week of slams, I just think he becomes more dangerous. Mm. So if I had to pick, I'm going Wawrinka, but I think it could be five sets.
I can't wait. I'm really pumped. Okay, and then it's Nadal against Thiem in the evening session. We've all gone for Thiem, which seems...
Well, pre-tournament.
What are we doing?
Oh, no. The more I think
That's
about
ridiculous.
That, it's Nadal.
But...
What are we doing?
I have gone Thiem in the newsletter, and that's because I looked up the odds, because we've sorted out our daily predictions so that they're weighted according to the risk that you take.
Yes. But no gambling on the Tennis Podcast. We don't do gambling.
No, we just use that as an indicator of, unfortunately, no money is changing hands.
No.
If it were, then I'd be quids in.
Pride is all she wants.
Yeah, I'd be cashing out now because it can only go downhill. Yeah, the odds for Nadal Thiem are so heavily stacked in Nadal's favour. I don't think they didn't seem right to me. I don't really understand odds, so I'm not going to go numbers. But Matt and I both looked at one another and said, Thiem's got more chance than that. So I thought it was a relatively a good risk-reward ratio. So
soon we have to start doing sets, don't we?
Mm.
Oh, that's going to be good. Right.
If you say so. yeah, I don't know. I've set up 2020 as my year to go big on Thiem. So I think he's going to do something this year.
So David Law-esque.
I know. So I'm backing him now, and I'm saying okay. He's going to beat Nadal.
Okay.
What do you think, David?
Emphatic.
Well, no, I mean, definitely not emphatic. You can see the expression on his face.
Got away with that one.
He went with it. I don't know. I need to have a little bit of a think before I put my newsletter prediction in. That's where you'll get it, folks. Sign up to your newsletter. And we will bring you another Tennis Podcast tomorrow. First of all, though, shout-outs, Matt. People that have backed the Tennis Podcast Kickstarter.
Yes.
To £100 each.
Thank you very much to Sarah Pheasant.
Thank you, Sarah.
To Manjeet Bala.
Thank you, Manjeet.
And to Catherine Sauter.
Good on you, Catherine. Oh,
great
they
name.
All sound great, don't
Catherine
they?
Catherine with a K or the C?
With a K.
And a Y.
And a Y. Mm.
Ah. See? All different spellings.
Distant relation.
Thank you all. Yeah, there are loads of people on Reddit if you want to sign up to the old Tennis Podcast community that's going on. That's really good. Have a look at the show notes. Leave us a review on iTunes. Loads of people have leaving us reviews. That's really nice, isn't it? Most of them have said nice things as well. Newsletter, I've told you about that. Tell your friends about the Tennis Podcast. If you come across anybody who seems to like tennis, railroad them into signing up for this, all right? Immediately. And we'll be back with another Tennis Podcast tomorrow. After the play has finished, loads of good matches tomorrow. Hope you enjoy them. See you then.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.